Well, you might notice from your bulletin this morning that today is August 28th, 2016. Exactly 1 year ago, a series of events began to unfold that ushered in a brand new chapter in Lisa and I's life. It was a Friday, and Lisa was scheduled to go into labor any day. But it seemed like a pretty normal day, just feeling pretty good. In fact, she ran 2 miles after work, and then we went to a sweet 16 birthday party for Gabriella. And I want you to know that we danced a ton that night. We hardly stopped to take a break. You guys, Lisa was 9 months pregnant, and she was still in better shape than me. I was the one asking to sit down, to take a breather. I don't know if people were joking or not when they said, "You're going to dance the baby out." Zoe was not joking. Anyway, after that, we got home sometime around 10 p.m. And we just looked at each other, and I think we said, "You know what? The baby is coming any day. When is the next time we'll have a Friday night free to take a late night walk?" So we just went for it. We just decided to set out. We hopped on the 606, and we end up going all the way down to the Damon stop, where we would normally get a little donuts or froyo. But this night, we decided to go all out, and we got both, donuts and froyo. So we got these big donuts and these cups of froyo, and we headed back on the 606, and then around midnight, in the middle of the 606, I noticed Lisa starting to slow down. And then she turned to me and said, "I think I'm having contractions." So, we headed straight home. We did not pass go. We did not collect $200. We went straight to the hospital. And several hours later, Zoe was here. And those extra calories, I think, helped us get through the night. So, we decided to make this a little tradition, and on August 28th, the night before her birthday, we're going to go on a walk with Zoe and get donuts and froyo. Only for those of you who tend to worry, I appreciate you, and I want you to rest assured that we will go much earlier this time. Only one thing we do need to be careful about, though, is how tricky froyo can be. For those of you who've never been to one of these frozen yogurt places, it's usually self-serve and there's dozens of different flavors, and then there's this buffet-style, like, spread of candy and fruit and chocolate toppings. And then at the end, you put your cup on what looks like this miniature cattle scale, and they weigh it, and you pay by how much it weighs. The problem is, at least for me, it's easier to think that things are lighter than they actually are. Right? You see, how much does a gummy bear weigh? Nothing. Throw it on. How much does a marshmallow weigh? Nothing. Throw it on. How much does fruit weigh? I don't know, a berry? Throw it on. And then at the end, you put it on the scale, and it's like, "How did I get a pound of ice cream?" Froyo can be tricky. It's easy to miscalculate the weight of things, but this applies to other areas of life too. Just a few years ago, a pilot of a passenger jet with 233 passengers entered the routine calculations for his flight. Now, the computer takes these calculations and generates the speed that the plane should go and the angle that it should go in order to take off. So then everything's going normal. The plane is heading down the runway, and just as it gets to the end of the strip, the pilot realized that it's not going to make it. So at the last minute, he manually grabbed the controls, pulled up, and saved the plane. They later found out that the problem was he had not added in the weight of the fuel. Another plane literally ran out of fuel mid-flight, like no fuel in the middle of their flight, and they had to make an emergency landing. And they later found out it was because of an error made weighing the fuel in pounds instead of kilograms. It can be dangerous to miscalculate the weight of things. Some of you know that Aaron Winter, our children's director, has joked about being afraid of flying. So I just want to say, Aaron, you will forget everything I just said. Most of us don't have to deal with measuring jet fuel. But this also applies to something every one of us deals with every day. We will deal with it today, and we will deal with it tomorrow. It's a vital component of our everyday faith, and that is our words. Research says that we speak an average of 700 times a day. Like Froyo, it can be tricky. Like jet fuel, it can be dangerous. We got to know it's easy to miscalculate the weight of our words. In other words, it's easy to forget how much our words matter. Sometimes we get the impression from society at large that we can kind of put out whatever we want to say, or our words just bounce off the surface, or that words are nothing and actions are everything. But maybe more than any other book of the Bible, Proverbs reminds us that our words are weighty. And what I mean by that is that our words carry a significant impact on our lives and the lives of others. Listen to what it says in Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat of its fruit. I'm not exaggerating, but merely restating the message of this verse to say that the course of our lives hang in the balance of how we use our words. How we use them matters. We have so much opportunity in our day and age to use words. We can't forget for a single moment our words are weighty. So that is what we find all throughout the book of Proverbs. I went through and counted, and there are at least 59 verses in the book of Proverbs about how we use our words. So this morning we're going to be focusing on chapters 10 through 12 in particular to see what they say about this subject. So if you have your Bible with you and you're not there already, I'll invite you to open to Proverbs chapter 10, where we'll begin. A proverb can take many forms. You might have noticed in chapters 1 through 9, the proverbs are longer, often covering multiple paragraphs or chapters around one topic at a time. But beginning in chapter 10, going almost to the end, the proverbs are mostly short. These are the brief, two-line statements that often cover a variety of different subjects from verse to verse. And although there's a variety of different subjects, when we look closely, we find that it's not all unrelated. We can detect groups of proverbs or clusters that all deal with the same subject. In chapters 10 through 12, we see a large grouping of proverbs around the subject of our words. In fact, of the 59 verses in the entire book of Proverbs that deal with our words, almost 30 of them are found in these chapters. So what we're going to do is scan through these chapters a few times, each time tracking a different principle. And there are three principles about the weight of our words. Three principles about how our words matter. And the first is this: the thoughtfulness of our words matters. The thoughtfulness of our words matters. Let's take a look at chapter 10, verse 8. The wise of heart will receive commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin. And then again in verse 10, whoever winks the eye causes trouble, and a babbling fool will come to ruin. It continues in verse 19. When words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. We see a similar theme picked up in chapter 11, verses 12 and 13. Whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. 13, whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps the thing covered. And then again in chapter 12, verse 23. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims or blurts out folly. What these have in common is a contrast. On the one hand, there's a kind of speaking that's described as babbling, or as it says in 10:19, when words are many. This is a picture of someone whose words rush out like a babbling brook. What is the difference between a babbling brook and a serene, tranquil lake? It's how quick the water is moving. So in other words, this is about being quick to speak. And what we see repeated is that this leads to ruin. It brings about damage. It can hurt ourselves and those around us. Our relationships, family and friends, our witness can be hurt when words just rush out. As 10:19 adds, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. Or as the NLT puts it, it leads to sin. It opens the door to sin. People will be hurt and God will be offended. On the other hand, in contrast, there is a person who restrains his or her lips in 10:19. Instead of bringing insult, remains silent in 11:12, is trustworthy with sensitive information in 11:13, and conceals knowledge in 12:23. This is a picture, not just of a person who is on the quieter side, but a person who actively controls their speech, restrains their lips. You see, I want to make clear that this is not just about how much we talk or don't talk. Some people are simply wired to be more verbal than others. And those of us who are like that probably have to be a little bit more on guard in this area. But those of us who aren't can still be just as susceptible. Because whether we talk more or talk less, we can all be careless when we do speak. And that's what this is about. Careless words. Thoughtless words. Not thinking or caring about what we say or if we should say anything at all. It's when we let words just fly quickly out of our mouths without giving any thought. I think of Proverbs 15:28. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. It comes down to this. How quickly do our words pass from our inside to our outside? Our minds process words at the rate of milliseconds. I want to challenge us, myself included, to begin to take 2 seconds to think about what we say or if we should say it. These proverbs call us to reject careless, thoughtless words. And there's 3 practices among many I want to highlight that will help with this. And they all involve around time. So the first is taking time to listen to others. This will help reject careless words. Those who are characterized by babbling, the one who is characterized by babbling is more concerned about their own voice than the voice of others. We have to ask ourselves, do I truly want to hear from others, or am I only out to be heard? Am I eager to always share what I know, or like the person in chapter 12:23, do I conceal knowledge sometimes? Knowing the difference of when to offer my input and when to just offer my ear, when to speak and when to not. Taking time to listen opens the door for words that are thoughtful, not careless. As it says in James chapter 1, verse 19, let every person be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And that leads us to our second practice, taking time to pause when angry. You see, anger is often the main culprit behind careless words. When we are angry, we are more likely to say things without thinking or caring. Ephesians 4:26 and 27 says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not let the devil get a foothold. In other words, we need to be aware that our anger leads us vulnerable to sin, definitely including our speech. Some of the best advice I've gotten in this area was from a pastor many years ago. And he said that in the midst of your anger, pause and pray. It sounds simple. And I don't always get it right. But when I do, I want you to know, I can testify from the bottom of my heart that it makes a real difference. Pause and pray. It's about just stepping aside, taking a breath, and saying something like, God, I want to do this your way. Help me to see what truly matters. Help me to see this from your perspective. I need your help. I need your grace. I pray that you would lead me, guard my heart, and guard my words, and that you would bring peace. I surrender to you. And then you watch how it just switches. So we take time to listen to others. We take time to pause and pray. And third, we have no time for gossip. Having no time for gossip. You see, gossip is a form of careless speech. It's the careless multiplying of words that brings damage to others. It's what Proverbs 11:13 is talking about. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps the thing covered. I'll put it plainly. We cannot have any part in gossip, whatever end of the conversation we are on. We cannot go there. Proverbs describes gossip as a delicious morsel. It looks good, it tastes good, but there is nothing good about it. It only does harm. So we have to set the tone that we will not participate in speaking or hearing about others in that way. Instead, we are to be trustworthy, to be extremely thoughtful and careful with what we say and what we do not say. We are called to reject careless words. A verse from Scripture that I find to be like a wake-up call is Matthew 12:36. And Jesus says that on the last day, we will give an account for every careless word that we speak. Careless words matter to God. The thoughtfulness of our words matters. The second principle that we see in these chapters is that the truthfulness of our words matters. The truthfulness of our words matters. This begins in chapter 10, verse 6. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. And then it comes up again in the second half of verse 11. But the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. It continues in 10:18. The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slander is a fool. We see it again in chapter 12, verse 17. Whoever speaks the truth gives honest evidence, but a false witness utters deceit. Verse 19 of chapter 12. Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. And finally, verse 22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight. These verses describe lying and deceitful words on the one hand and truthful words on the other. Sometimes we tend to see lying as not such a big deal. In the spur of the moment, it helps us to get what we want. It helps us to avoid correction and confrontation, which most of us would rather avoid, or looking bad, or doing the hard thing. Sometimes it seems like lying is the path of least resistance. But we can see the negative effect of lying in three concentric circles in these verses. Ourselves, those around us, and God. First, lying hurts ourselves. In chapter 10, verse 6, there's a contrast between those who are blessed on the one hand and those who deceive on the other. So the contrast means that there are people who are blessed, but those who deceive are not. The people who are blessed by others are ones who the community is grateful for, but not those who deceive. In 12:19, those who are honest have a lasting impact. But when our words are mixed with lies, they lose their value. They mean nothing. So the question is, at the end of the day, what will be the worth of our words? They can have an impact, or they can mean nothing. See, lying hurts ourselves. And second, lying hurts those around us. In 12:17, the false witness who utters deceit can do a lot of harm to others. Lying has the power to tear apart families and friendships and communities. In Ephesians 4:25, the church is told to put off falsehood and speak truth to one another. Why? Because we are members of one another. We are tied together. But lying breaks down this connection. It breaks down trust, which is the building block of all community, small and large. We want to be a church family where we are connecting with one another and where deep relationships are being fostered, which lead to spiritual transformation and flourishing, and where we spur one another on to love and good deeds. But lying is like putting a spoke in that wheel. It breaks it down. It breaks down connection and community. In other words, lying isolates. It's like taking a huge knife and cutting a circle around you so that you're just left on an island by yourself. You see, lying severs us. Loving truth binds us, but harmful lies sever us. Lying hurts those around us. It hurts the community. And third, we see the effect of lying and how it's viewed by God. Chapter 12, verse 22 says this: "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight." We often don't use abomination in our everyday conversation. An abomination is something that makes you so upset that your stomach turns. It's that feeling that you get in the pit of your stomach that you when you hear something that is so deeply troubling and you say, "That's awful." That's what abomination means. And the striking thing is, speaking in human terms, that is how God feels about our lying. It's like, "Oh." As one commentator said, God is faithful and true, so our lying runs directly against who He is. God is faithful and true, but Jesus called Satan the father of lies. Whose character are we reflecting? Verse 11 ends that those who act faithfully, including their words, are a delight to God. The contrast could not be more stark. This matters deeply to God. So at this point, we have to ask honestly, are we being truthful in all areas of our lives? And I want to highlight that being truthful is not just about what we say. It's also about what we don't say. Notice how often the word conceals shows up in these verses. Chapter 10, 6, conceals. 10, 11, conceals. 10, 18, conceals. Dishonesty is also about what we are concealing. We can be living a lie without speaking a lie. It reminds me of a time, a long time ago, when I was really young, like 5 or 6 years old, and my dad owned a baseball card shop, and he would organize his expensive baseball cards at home with these super tall stacks on these little tables that he had in his workspace. And you know that with baseball cards, every little nick in the corner matters. And he repeatedly corrected us and told us not to play around in his workspace. But one day, when he wasn't there, I did. And sure enough, I bumped over a table and knocked down all the cards. My dad came home and noticed, but somehow my parents thought that my older brother did it. I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know if I was playing with his ball or they had seen him in there or something, but they thought that my older brother had did it. and I didn't say anything. And I remember the feeling of guilt come over me as I listened to my older brother being spanked in the room next to me. But I didn't say anything. And I never did. I don't have qualms with the doctrine of original sin. I am living proof. So you see, you can lie by what you don't say. Maybe that's an extreme example. Most of us probably aren't listening to others getting punished on our behalf. But there's other ways this can show up in our daily lives. I want to encourage us to consider these questions. Is there something we are withholding that should be shared with our spouse or our boss or our parents or whoever is affected? Are we dishonestly concealing something that should be appropriately brought to the light? Is there someone we need to come clean to today and say, "Hey, I haven't been completely honest with you"? In the end, it is worth it because the truthfulness of our words matters. The third and final principle that we see in these chapters is this: the helpfulness of our words matters. And this begins in the first half of 10:11. The helpfulness of our words matters. 10:11, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. And then again in 10:20, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. And then the first half of 21, the lips of the righteous feed many. And there's more, but we'll skip to 11:9. With his mouth, the godless man would destroy his neighbor, but by knowledge, the righteous are delivered. And then verse 11, by the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is overthrown. And then jump over to chapter 12, verse 6. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them. And then verse 18. The one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And finally, verse 25 of chapter 12. One of my personal favorites. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. The contrast that we see in these verses has been implied throughout this entire passage, but here it brings it out clearly. Our words have the power to be an instrument of incredible good or incredible destruction. So on the one hand, there can be destruction. 11:9 says that with our words we can destroy our neighbor. We have the potential with our words to really tear someone down. For example, we can make pronouncements about people's low worth that stick to them, like those price tags that are almost impossible to get off apart from the redemptive work of God. We got to know that our poisonous words, like biological warfare, can sink inside and infect others. 11:11 expands the impact exponentially from one person being torn down to an entire city of people being torn down. In our homes, neighborhoods, at work, school, and social media, are we tearing down? In chapter 12, verse 6, our words can attack people like a verbal ambush, ready to pounce on them and take them down. In 12:18, like sword thrusts, our remarks can pierce people's hearts. Proverbs 15:4 says that they can break the spirit. Proverbs 16:27 says that they can be a scorching fire. Wow. Our words have the power to bring a lot of destruction, probably more than we realize. But on the other hand, our words have the power to do so much good. probably more than we realize. In 10:11, it says our words can be like a fountain of life. We might not appreciate this as much as the original readers because we have water all around us. But in an ancient Near Eastern context, a fresh source of water would be so valuable. It refreshes and renews and brings life to dry places. In chapter 10, verse 21, it says that our words can feed many. Not a few, many. That word is also translated nourish. Or even some places it's translated shepherd. If there are children in our lives, and as a church family there are, just think, we can feed them words that are life-giving. And even though words can tear down an entire city of people, in contrast, 11:11 also says that our words can build up an entire city. It says specifically, by the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. God has placed us here on the corner of California and McLean. And part of the way we bless this area, the way we spread the goodness of God here, is by taking opportunities to speak into the lives of others. Pastor Ralph and I were talking about this passage this week, and he shared about the simple words of a third grade teacher that changed the trajectory of his life. What if, as one example, we as a church did that at Chase Elementary School? What an impact! And what if people noticed the goodness of God through us and doors were open to authentically bear witness to the saving work of Jesus in our lives? What an eternal impact! Our words can elevate life in this area, physically and ultimately spiritually. Chapter 12:18 says that our words can bring healing to those who have wounds. It reminds me of C.S. Lewis's Narnia, where the little bottle of potion that Lucy had, and she would put it on people's open wounds, and they would be restored. I haven't actually read anything by C.S. Lewis. I have failed you as a pastor, but I have seen the movies. Our words have the power to be like that little potion of Lucy's. Our words have the power to bring healing to wounds. In 12:25, our words can lift up the heavy heart. In 16:24, they can bring sweetness to the soul. As one preacher said, there's much more to our words than puffs of air that come through our vocal cords. Our words can bring incredible good. It depends how we use them. The helpfulness of our words matters. So if Proverbs is telling us that our words are weighty and how we use them matters, how do we change our words? If we are sitting here and thinking, yes, I want my words to be more thoughtful, more truthful, and more helpful, how do we do that? If we don't remember anything else, I want us to remember this. This is what it comes down to. The book of Proverbs tells us that what we say on the outside comes from what's going on the inside. For example, Proverbs 16:23, the hearts of the wise make their mouths prudent. The hearts make the mouth prudent. In other words, our words flow out of who we are. They flow out of our hearts. That's what Jesus says in Matthew 12:34. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And again, in Matthew 15:18, what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart. Imagine that I come home today and I am just so thirsty. Like maybe I walked outside on the 606, there's no shade, and I am just so thirsty by the time I get home, and all I want is some icy cold Chicago tap water. Right? There's nothing like it. So I go to my sink and I turn on the knob and there's this constant stream of brown mud water that comes pouring out. What am I to do? Do you think that I will fix the problem by simply fixing the faucet? Will I fix the problem by changing the faucet? No, it's deeper. I gotta get to the root of it. I gotta get to the source. The faucet is just the gateway from what's under the surface to the outside world. It won't help to change it. Likewise, we can't just manage our words from the outside. It will never work. What it takes is getting to the source. If we want to change our words, we need to yield to God to change our hearts. We need the transformation that He alone can bring by His grace. None of us get our words right. The book of James says that if we do, we're perfect. And I'm sure that He's not finished with us. So we all stumble in this area and we need God's grace to change. Let's throw ourselves on God's grace today. He's ready to forgive. He's ready to make new. He's ready to transform. His grace is enough. Christ never once sinned with His mouth. And He died and rose again so that by faith our record could be switched with His. And to give us the Spirit to change us from the inside out. So let's cling to that with all that we've got. Let's throw ourselves on the grace of God today. Let's surrender to Him. Psalm 19:14. May the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be pleasing in Your sight, O Lord, our Rock and Redeemer. Let's pray.